From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
To all of those Bernie Sanders voters who have been left out in the cold by a rigged system of superdelegates, we welcome you with open arms.
That was the presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump reaching out to supporters of Bernie Sanders as early primary returns were coming in Tuesday from New Jersey, California, and four other states. Trump was in Westchester County Tuesday night, and he hit on one of Sanders' strong point issues, trade deals like NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which were strong negatives for former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
And by the way, the terrible trade deals that Bernie was so vehemently against, and he's right on that, will be taken care of far better than anyone ever thought possible. And that's what I do. We are going to have fantastic trade deals. We're going to start making money and bringing in jobs.
Clinton also tried to reach into Sanders' base Tuesday night.
And let there be no mistake, Senator Sanders, his campaign, and the vigorous debate that we've had about how to raise incomes, reduce inequality, increase upward mobility have been very good for the Democratic Party and for America.
However, Sanders himself got a preview of the problems that Clinton will face trying to get those feeling the burn to fall in line with her campaign.
Tonight, I had a very gracious call from Secretary Clinton and congratulated her on her victories tonight.
Clinton and Sanders split the Dakotas, with Sanders taking North Dakota with 64% of the vote, and Clinton winning South Dakota with 51%. Sanders took Montana with 51%, while Clinton took New Mexico with 51%. Clinton won New Jersey with 63% of the vote, while the big prize, California, was still in play as of press time Wednesday. Returns were slow coming in from that state, with only 76% of the vote reported as of 5 a.m. New York time, more than 6 hours after polls closed at 8 p.m. Pacific time. Early returns showed Clinton with a big lead, but that lead eroded as more districts reported. As of 10:45 p.m. Pacific time, with 38% of districts reporting, Clinton had been ahead at 60.4% to Sanders' 38.5%, a 21.6% lead. With 92% of districts reporting, Clinton had 55.8% to Sanders' 43.3%. This past Saturday, Sanders pointed to the actual pledged delegate count and the rules to explain why it isn't over until the balloting is over at the convention in July.
It is extremely unlikely that Secretary Clinton will have the requisite number of pledged delegates to claim victory on Tuesday night. Now, I have heard reports that Secretary Clinton has said it's all going to be over on Tuesday night. I have heard reports that the media, after the New Jersey results come in, are going to declare that it is all over. That simply is not accurate. There are 931 pledged delegates at stake in contests between today and June 14th. For Secretary Clinton to get to the magic number of 2,383, she would have to win two-thirds of those pledged delegates. Frankly, unless I am very, very mistaken, that is absolutely not going to happen. In other words, at the end of the nominating process, no candidate will have enough pledged delegates to call the campaign a victory. They will be dependent upon superdelegates. In other words, the Democratic National Convention will be a contested convention.
The delegate count after the June 7th primary results showed Clinton at 1,926 and Sanders at 1,615. There are 2,383 delegates needed for a first ballot victory in Philadelphia. Brian Becker, who hosts Radio Sputnik's program Loud and Clear, spoke with Pacifica reporter Dennis Bernstein, who claimed that there was massive voter fraud and voter suppression in California.
The poll said as of yesterday that Hillary Clinton and Sanders were neck and neck. Sanders, of course, was counting on California to prove that he had momentum going into the contested convention in Philadelphia. What happened?
Well, now I don't know if it had anything to do with the with all the finagling around superdelegates and the last-minute calling of the election last night. But I can tell you this. I've done extensive reporting, and I've got a team that's been working on the voting structures. And based on a variety of disenfranchisement, it is a massive, I can say it right away, a massive amount of voter fraud. Hundreds and thousands of people being turned away, given the wrong ballots, given conditional ballots, hostile poll workers refusing to honor the law and give the necessary ballot that would be counted as opposed to the provisional ballot. Many, many young people voting for the first time ended up with provisional ballots. The incredible to see disrespect for the voters was unbelievable. Pollsters being confronted by the truth tried to resist. The Secretary of State in Contra Costa County to order local polling places there to exchange, to the proper exchange, so voters that were independent, I don't mean the independent fascist party, but independent voters who were not Democratic, registered as Democrats, it was just unbelievable. Wherever you look, whatever county you went in, there was a purge going on.
You're saying that in the state of California, there was not in one place or two places, but on a statewide basis, a concerted effort to actually steal the election or to suppress Sanders voters. And this is the Democratic Party state machine in California. It's a very powerful machine. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, and of course, it happened in poor communities. It happened in consistently in areas that were targeting minority communities. I heard early on from a listener to Flash Python, KPFA Olga Martinez, that she went to the polling place. She declared her rights to have a Democrat to be registered to vote within the framework of the Democratic Party to be given a vote. She had the legal right be given the proper vote, but they refused to give it to her. Now, this happened, and she fought, and she fought, and she finally got it. But, for instance, Frank, Freewheel and Frank, who worked at Pacifica KPFA, he and the five people in front of him were told that they were either in the wrong polling place or that they voted as Republicans last time, so they won't be able to vote, or that they weren't registered. And this happened again and again by the tens, by the hundreds, by the thousands. As I said, the Secretary of State had to step in Contra Costa County to order them to give people the ballots that would be counted instead of the provisional placebo votes that get counted later or never. There had to be an order. And even then, the Contra Costa County officials, the election officials said, okay, we're going to do it this time, but this will be the only time we're going to do it. We're going to go back to the disenfranchisement policy of that we were carrying out earlier today. Now, I don't know if that puts it over the top in terms of the difference. If there's a huge separation, it's hard to say if the Clinton lead is all about voter fraud. But I can tell you that one out of three voters in California vote independently. One out of three. And huge segments of that one out of three were disenfranchised today. There is absolutely no doubt about it. There will be lawsuits across the state to take this on.
For more on Tuesday's primaries and what they mean going forward, we spoke with Professor Tony Montero via Skype from Philadelphia Wednesday morning. Well, let's see. The entire universe is declaring that Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee, although Bernie Sanders' pledged delegate count is closer to Clinton than Clinton is to the number needed to win on the first ballot vote. So
now we're moving, I think, from the mechanics of the primary and nominating process, which is crazy to say the least, and corrupt at its best, we're moving to the next stage. And here, I think Bernie Sanders and the movement that he is a part of has to decide a convention strategy. And I think that going forward, they have to make the case that Clinton has not yet secured the pledged delegates necessary to win the nomination. And the case has to be made that the super delegates, or at least a good part of them, have to stand down and consider the wishes of the masses of people, which means, when I say the turn towards the mass movement and the convention strategy, which means tens of thousands of people in the streets of Philadelphia protesting a corrupt and undemocratic process. But, a sigh of relief can be heard from the financial markets around the world. They got a break, although I think very brief. And so here we are. Yeah.
You know, that break actually might have come in the form of the political equivalent of the guy who breaks your kneecaps. In California, apparently, Pacifica Radio's Dennis Bernstein was reporting that there was widespread voter suppression and other irregularities. And the situation there with an open primary was set up in a way where if you're a Democrat to go in and vote, and Clinton was leading among Democrats, all you have to do is get your ballot and, enter your ballot. If you were an independent, a no-party preference, as they call it in California, and the majority of those, and a larger number of them, favored Sanders, you had to go through two steps if you were doing it at the polls, and three steps if you were going using an absentee ballot. You would get the ballot without a presidential choice. You'd have to send it back with proof that it's you, and then you get a new ballot, presumably.
Wow. I didn't know all of that, which then explains the Clinton victory, which resembles New York in certain ways, because that system obviously is set up to favor the insiders and to favor the most corrupt elements within the political process. But I'm certain that this will only fuel the anger of the Bernie Sanders people, and will make it very, very difficult, no matter what Bernie Sanders says, for his supporters and those who voted for him to now turn to Hillary Clinton under the guise of the lesser of two evils and some form of gender identity politics. I think what we have to think about, Don, is the next stage of this whole process that we're at. Once again, recognizing that what you have in the Sanders movement is an insurgency, a movement for some basic, if not fundamental and radical changes in economic policy, in the way that elected officials are chosen. And I think this movement is also calling for a multi-party system and perhaps an end to the two-party lesser of evils, Tweedledee and Tweedledum politics that has defined America for over 100 years or so. So I think we're going to a new stage. And in a lot of ways, we have to keep our ears to the ground to see just what the people are willing to do, how far they are willing to go to press their demands. I think that for so many people, for tens of millions, Clinton is such an odious and corrupt figure that people will not vote for her. And this will be a very interesting thing, because then the question is, how does Trump make his case on the economic issues, which could be the pivot around which the election turns.
You know, on that point, Trump was uncharacteristically eloquent last night in reaching out to Sanders supporters. He called them the Sanders people. And I was kind of surprised, actually. Let me play a little piece of that right now. Hold on. Here we go.
To those who voted for someone else in either party, I'll work hard to earn your support, and I will work very hard to earn that support. To all of those Bernie Sanders voters who have been left out in the cold by a rigged system of superdelegates, we welcome you with open arms. And by the way, the terrible trade deals that Bernie was so vehemently against, and he's right on that, will be taken care of far better than anyone ever thought possible. And that's what I do. We are going to have fantastic trade deals. We're going to start making money and bringing in jobs.
Yeah, so that was it. Now, Clinton made a play for them, too, but it didn't ring so well. And when Sanders mentioned Clinton at his, you know, wrap-up rally last night, the audience booed for like 30 seconds. He just mentioned her. He said, and I got a very gracious call from the Secretary of State, I expressed my congratulations to her for her showing today. And the audience booed for 30 seconds. You know, there's going to be hard work for her to swing those people, and Trump is making a direct play for him.
Oh, yes. And see, what we have are two important trends taking place. The coalescing, the potential, I should say, coalescing of the two insurgency movements on economic issues, on issues of war and peace, on issues of austerity, on issues of rebuilding the infrastructure and employing people, and so on. On the other side, you have a top-down coalition or top-down directed coalition, which is around Hillary Clinton and pretty much wants to keep things as they are. And of course, most people that think about any of this or follow any of this know that you cannot believe anything that Hillary Clinton says in the course of a campaign. You know, she's against TPP for the sake of campaigning, but if she's elected, she'll be for it, believe me. Not to mention all of the questions of war and peace, Syria, the ongoing struggle in Iraq, and of course, a Clinton presidency would push for the reintroduction of massive U.S. forces in Syria, perhaps Libya, and certainly in Iraq under the guise of fighting ISIS. Not to mention the Ukraine and the Baltic states and the brinksmanship that has begun with the Obama administration to towards both Russia and China, and the long-term project of the nuclear modernization project over the next few years. So I think from the standpoint of the financial markets, of the banking and billionaire class, a sigh of relief. But I think they realize that the situation is so fluid, and it is possible, although not inevitable, that Trump could be the face of a new insurgent, working class based, young people driven movement, a real 21st century movement for basic and fundamental change. And, you know, I think what we will see is clear-minded, clear-thinking, strategically oriented thinkers beginning to think about how to stop Hillary Clinton and what that will require on the ground in terms of what I call realpolitik.
You didn't get to see that play out so well, unless you, I assume, when it's, you know, when they're able to do it, when you parse the demographics that were represented yesterday, and you'd see that the youth did that already. But what was done apparently in California to hand Clinton a victory there was voter suppression of the independents, essentially, who are going to vote in November. And out of the group of independents that were behind Sanders, and he had a large majority of that group, according to polls, they are voting over those economic issues, and they're not Democrats. Yeah. So they're not going to break on social issues, even on race, on Islamophobia, mm-hmm. or anything else they mm-hmm. throw at Trump. They're going to vote based on the economic issues, and it appears that he has a major advantage there.
Yeah, and I think... you know, the ball is in Trump's court. You know, he could become that figure that stands for all of those economic questions and issues and foreign policy issues that the progressive and left forces and peace forces and anti-austerity forces have been talking about for at least two decades now. More than two decades, since the first Clinton administration. So this is a moment of truth. I mean, we on the left are going to be tested in terms of how we politically and strategically deal with this moment, because you're right. There are millions of independents and Democratic registered voters who feel left out, locked out, humiliated, put down, cheated. And those feelings are not going to be ameliorated easily. And those feelings, from my point of view, are the ground, the foundation of a new consciousness. The fact, and here's what I'd like to emphasize, and we've talked about this so often, Don, the fact that what we call working class questions of jobs, of the economy, of trade deals, of military spending are now on the front burner. So in a uniquely American way, and we have to again emphasize that we are in the United States of America, the hegemon, the major imperialist country, the country whose currency is the world reserve currency in trading and other things, this large military. You know, in this country, the path to the type of consciousness and movement that all of us wish to see is not going to be pure, is not going to fit what some of us imagined the way it would go. It is going to go the way that it must go, or the only way that it can. It will be circuitous. It will involve new types of coalitions and new types of conversations on the ground. But we are looking at a new type of class politics in this country in a very raw and rough form. And you know, part of the reason that it is taking the form that it is taking is because of the destruction of the trade union movement over the last 40 or so years. But more than that, a trade union leadership which performs as a misleadership class, which is more interested in their benefits, in their positions, in their salaries, than they are with the working class as a whole. So the trade union leadership, for the most part, offers no vision or future for the working class. So what we see is these uprisings of workers in this political moment, and they express themselves through the Sanders and Trump movements. I it's going to be a bitter pill to swallow if Sanders comes out and endorses Clinton under the mantra of stopping Trump, because it will, in a sense, be a betrayal of all that he has fought for over these months. But we'll have to see.
You know, looking forward and looking at an attempt to develop class unity, you have in this nation that was, as you described, but also importantly, founded on genocide and slavery and sustained by racism, you have the issue of race at the core, and in particular, black folks in the United States, a swing constituency that's going to be the prize that Hillary Clinton is, you know, looking to lock down, and she's had a good hold on it. They attack Trump as being a racist, rhetorically, and he doesn't help with his own his own pronouncements, the fundamental issues still remain economic, and how can he reach into the black community and try to develop a program that they can get behind?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to do it on the issues. He's going to have to do it on the issues. And you know, in terms of immigration, don't attack the immigrants, the undocumented. Attack the policies, in particular NAFTA and other trade agreements between Mexico and the United States, which destroyed the Mexican peasantry by dumping cheap American food into Mexico, and the wars in El Salvador and Nicaragua and the coups in Honduras and so on, creating failed states in Central America and thus people fleeing the violence in those countries. That's been going on for over 40 years from Central America. So attack the policy, not the immigrant. And it seems that that is inherent in the logic of attacking NAFTA. So he has to stick to the issues. He has to become more sophisticated. The ball is in his court in a lot of ways. To put it mildly, he will be the target of a ferocious ideological attack, the likes of which I don't think any individual in the history of American politics has witnessed. So, and his only defense would be to mobilize broad masses, and that includes African Americans who want to hear an economic alternative to what has gone on over the last, certainly the last 8 years, many, many years prior to that, going back into the 1990s.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.